Always Record, episode 10.
Kids all over the world, they only understand one thing.
All around the world, rock and roll is all it plays. All around the world, rock and roll is all it plays. All the flat top cats with the rock and roll queens, just a rockin' and a rollin' in the red and blue jeans. All around the world, rock and roll is here to stay. You can hear those jukebox jumping all night and all through the day. Ain't never no time for romance, they only wanna dance. The people are hollering to hit the floor, go cat go. Rock and roll is here to stay. You can hear those jukebox jumping all night and all through the day.
Whoa, there's Bill. Bill disappeared. I don't know.
No, that's Will Morgan.
Oh, cool.
I was talking to him, like, on Tuesday, I think Tuesday, or Monday, I don't know. Regardless, I was talking to him earlier this week. He's been listening to the Always Records, and, you know, he was saying how it's really funny how our show's been kind of overlapping with 42 Minutes and just different stuff. And he actually dropped a really awesome thing on me. I mentioned last week, or maybe not last week, but maybe a few weeks ago, I guess, was that he and I had a conversation about the spider and, like, the role of Athena and in the mythology of Arachne. So basically, the woman that's turned into a spider is turned into a spider by Athena, because Athena was the goddess of weaving, and Arachne basically says, you know, she's the greatest weaver, and Athena challenges her to a duel. Athena wins, and Arachne hangs herself. And Athena takes pity on her and turns her into a spider so she can weave all the time. That's the mythology of Arachne.
So you don't even know, dude. I was just about to go. The first thing I was going to get into was I watched Alien last night.
Uh-huh.
And Sigourney Weaver. And,
right.
And Arrakis.
So
from Dune.
Right. All right, so let's do it, because that's where I spoke to him earlier in the week, and the thing was, he hadn't listened to the most recent Always Record, where we talked about the Centaur, but he was dropping all this stuff. His thing is that his fascination is there's this movie just came out with it's called Brave, with the redhead girl.
Yeah, we were
the archer.
Yeah, totally. I want to see that.
So he's equating basically this sort of Babylonian redhead with the same thing. And what he dropped was that the girl with the bow and arrow is the Spider Woman, in the sense that, so if you have, like, your sort of like the bow. Right, is your board with the string between it, so you have your sort of thread between the two ends of the stick, so you have that sort of spider thread. And since we were talking about Athena being a goddess with a spear, so the arrow being essentially the weaving goddess's spear sitting on the thread of the weaving goddess. Can you picture that?
Yeah, totally. I'm charging through my VHS tapes right now, because I could have sworn that I brought my fucking Spider-Woman cartoon.
Awesome.
And I think I might... I'm pouring VHS tapes all over the room right now. Where the fuck? I'm just so curious. I was totally thinking that. And I was also just having this whole conversation about Rumpelstiltskin as the weaver, and okay, well, maybe I'm not seeing it, but there is a fucking Spider Woman cartoon that's super weird. that I used to have as a kid, but I don't see it. Anyway, yeah, whatever. I'm going to try and find it on the internet or something. But yeah, I remember it was really weird. I was thinking about it just recently. And I was thinking about the original Spider-Man cartoon, too, which I thought I had as well, where it shows it. But whatever.
Well, this new Spider-Man movie just came out 2 days ago, July 3rd.
Uh-huh.
And so, so I had this conversation with him on July 2nd. On July 3rd, the day the Spider-Man movie came out, this, like, really huge spider was in my bed, and I was able to capture it in a jar, and it was just, like, crazy. So it was just, like, totally bonding with this spider. And then I realized, oh, Spider-Man came out today, and I was just talking to Will about Spider-Woman. So I was like, maybe this is, she came to visit me.
Wow. Yeah, ever since the Charlotte's Web sync, which was a long time ago, but with Pink Floyd Animals, that had, like, that for a long time was, like, my favorite sync. It wasn't actually until I saw Hollywood and Holy Mountain that I felt like I found a sync that was, like, really a par with it. But the whole, there's levels to that in terms of, like, that the pig was gonna, what, I mean, what is Charlotte's Web? The pig is gonna get murdered, but if it can show that it's special in some way, because people don't recognize its specialness in the first place, and the spider is the one who does something spectacular, so people go, oh, it's worthwhile. And so I was looking at it from the perspective of, like, stardom, like the idea of the star is, like, not just like Saudi and the fishhook and all of that, but just the idea that to have something to show is, like, it's kind of fucked up. Like, you're like, you know, look, I got something to offer here. It's okay. Don't kill me. It's so weird. Like, I don't know. I felt like that was, like, a lot of what Pink Floyd Animals with Charlotte's Web was kind of expressing, was the levels of that and what that means. Like, they kind of present it like the animals are all aware that a Holocaust is approaching, and they're just kind of, like, you know, just harmlessly passing their time in the grassland away, and they're only dimly aware of it. But, like, the spider is totally aware of it, you know, because no one kills the spider, you know, the spider's like, you know, a fly on the wall, so to speak.
And yet the spider is totally a self-sacrifice for everyone else, because the spider is aware of it, because the spider knows that the spider's going to die.
Yeah.
Like, totally. No one's coming to kill the spider, but the spider in the act of childbirth dies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's saying, in order for new generations to go on, I know I have to give of myself. So I'm going to essentially give of myself to keep the other farm animals alive too, not just my spider children.
Totally. It's also in the film, it's Debbie Reynolds, which is kind of funny, because I kept on thinking of Fear and Loathing when they go to see Debbie Reynolds. They're like, we're friends with Debbie, I used to romp with her. And, like, they get in and then they get kicked out. Like, but they kind of, Pink Floyd kind of makes fun of Debbie Reynolds in the lyrics of Pigs. It's pretty good.
What did they mention her in?
Call her an old hag, and kind of, like, I mean, they don't say Debbie Reynolds, but that's my assessment.
Okay.
You're referring to the pig in terms of that the pig is Debbie Reynolds, you know?
Right. Okay.
I don't know any further significance of that necessarily, other than the fact that, like I said, Fear and Loathing has been a kind of a sink thing recently for me. There's been a bunch of different things. I was considering, like, when they're in the bathroom and the attorney takes all that acid and he goes, you eat all this acid? And he goes, that's right, music! And he wants to hear White Rabbit. Oh, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Got quiet. Anyways, yeah, he wants to hear White Rabbit. And when he pulls out the knife, Hunter S. Thompson takes the fucking shower stick and, like, gets all intense with it and is like, don't fuck with me now, man. I am Ahab. And Ahab is the character in Moby Dick.
Moby Dick. There's a book that was written actually from somebody who's local here. Was it Enlightenment? The Darndest Thing was his first one, or The Damnedest Thing or whatever is his first one. Then he did a book about how Moby Dick is a whole spiritual metaphor, and it's pretty far out. But anyway, it's the idea that the attorney in the bathtub is like the great white whale, and he's like dealing with the great white whale. But the thing with Moby Dick is that like he basically, in the end, ends up attached to the whale. He gets taken down with the whale, and the whale was his thing that he's after, but then he ends up going down with it. It's kind of like...
Well, when he says white rabbit, the white rabbit and the white whale are the same thing. They're the things you chase hopefully. That take you into the underworld, right? So
completely. That's exactly what I'm communicating. Yeah, totally. So I don't know. I had been tripping out on that yesterday, and so kind of funny. But... So, oh, maybe Debbie is Debbie Reynolds the pig or the spider? I forget. I'd have to look that up. The fuck? I haven't watched it with sound in so long.
If it's the sacrificial pig there, it'd be pretty funny if it's Debbie, because it's, I was just thinking, I was writing something about JFK yesterday, and I was writing a play on Debbie Does Dallas as the JFK.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but Alien, the guy's name was Dallas. And I kept on thinking of Debbie Does Dallas late last night because we were sitting there watching Alien, and the character who ends up in the cocoon, but he's in the aliens like lair. His name was Dallas, and I'm trying to remember what the.
That's right.
Hello? There was a bunch of things.
Corbin Dallas?
Hey, is that what you guys hear me?
No, Corbin Dallas is Fifth Element. Oh. Hey, Tommy. Tommy, we can hear you.
Oh, cool. Alright. Hey, how's my mic sound?
Good.
Is it loud as crap, or is it pretty much equal?
No, yeah, sounds equal to me.
Alright, good.
So, Debbie Reynolds is actually Charlotte. That's funny. Debbie Reynolds is funny.
Wait, so who plays the pig?
I was just looking at that. This guy named Henry Gibson. Okay. I don't know. I thought it was a female that played the pig, but I guess it was this guy.
I haven't. It's been a long time for me for Charlotte's Web.
Uh huh.
What are you guys trying to figure out? Because I've seen that.
Oh, he was just talking about. Apparently, the actress Debbie Reynolds plays the spider, Charlotte.
Mm.
And apparently, Debbie Does Dallas. It's a. Just to bring you up to speed, we're talking about. Spider Woman.
Okay.
So Debbie Reynolds is in the television series Alice, which is nothing to do with Alice in Wonderland, but it's a greasy spoon diner in Phoenix, Arizona. Phoenix is always funny. When Phoenix comes up, I think of, obviously, the Phoenix.
Okay. I'm going to throw you a sentence. Just last night, I watched this 1985 movie called The Explorers, which is Ethan Hawke and River Phoenix. They're both of them in their first like big movie roles, Ethan Hawke and River Phoenix. And I'm thinking to myself, Hawke and Phoenix?
Uh-huh.
Like, it's pretty like blatant. It's like about these two kids, actually three kids, who go to space, and like they get contacted, like the aliens contact them through their dreams and tell them how to build like this device that'll bring them to them. So it's totally. All this like alien telepathic contact with the Hawk and the Phoenix. And I'm like,
right. So originally the what we see on the dollar bill as the Hawk, right. The Eagle was originally a Phoenix.
Right.
And you can see old renditions of that. And what's weird is, like, the symbolism of Scorpio. See, we're ruled by Scorpio, according to Manly P. Hall, right? America is. like every nation has its correspondent constellation, even more than just the 12. It's constellations across the board. So like Russia's the bear, etc. But I thought it was kind of interesting, like us being Scorpio in that regard, because Scorpio is represented, yes, as a scorpion, but also as an eagle and also as a dove.
Correct. Yeah.
So you have these three different expressions of Scorpio. And this, people say it's a process of putrefaction where you end up with like higher levels of dealing with the same energetic. So what once initially is like very sacrificial in and of itself, like it sacrifices its self. I mean, it ultimately always sacrifices itself, but it has a different energetic around how it goes about it. One with a lack of awareness that this is what's going to happen, and so it comes out in a really like fucking crazy way. And then other levels where it's able to play more of a witness and detach itself, and then that would be the eagle. And then the dove is the full awareness where it knows it's basically Charlotte. So it's interesting. It's like it's kind of, it goes from Wilbur to Charlotte in the symbolism there.
Absolutely. And what we were talking last week, we mentioned like the whole Swan Lake as the crossbow, you know, he's going to shoot the swan with a crossbow. And then you have the Lady Hawk, where the guy with the crossbow is, and his lover is the Lady Hawk. And the Lady Hawk actually ends up getting shot by the arrow at some point. Well, If you look at the constellation of Sagittarius and look at the constellation of Scorpio, but change Scorpio to your eagle or dove, you have that he's basically pointing the arrow at her.
Hmm.
So he's, you know, he's the huntsman. He's the, in some ways, the sort of executioner of all this. But just, you know, in the sort of way of like a Pontius Pilate, you know, sort of the executioner in, you know, destined, it's, you know, it's just sort of like, that's the role.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying not to put judgment on it, you know, it's, just that's the role there. That's, you have the executioner and the sort of divine sacrifice. You know, this gets us into sort of awkward territory because, you know, a lot of people see sacrificial, you know, the sacrificial imagery as something very negative. And certainly if, you know, someone's killing, whether it be an animal or another person, as a sacrifice to some, you know, god, that's kind of, you know, in a very literal sense, that's fucked up. Like, if someone's doing that, you know, I don't believe in animal sacrifices or human sacrifices, but on a personal sacrifice level of like, okay, it's time for me to sacrifice for others. I mean, I think sacrifice in that respect is very important. And if that's, so again, it's like, if that's what we're signifying here, then that's beautiful. It's, I just want to sort of throw that caveat out because I know I myself, I mean, it's really a lot of mixed imagery there.
Totally. I was thinking about Alien. And because we just watched the first Alien, and then Ripley ultimately ends up being a sacrifice in 3. She throws herself into the fire, right? You guys there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Keeps cutting out. Like, it sounds like you guys are gone. There's no more fuzz.
I muted because I wanted to get the power plug for this laptop.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't want to say that during the recording, but yes. I'm going to grab the power cord.
So I was just thinking of Ripley as a sacrifice. But there's this whole thing where immediately I'm telling my girlfriend right before we watch it to pay attention for Freudian symbolism because, you know, the alien itself is a big dick, which is really apparent. And if anyone's ever looked at H.R. Giger's work, they know that he loves to do that. And so I was like, well, let's see about, like, you know, psychology symbolism, because it's also really Scott, you know, it's just like, I'm sure there's something subtextual. There was a really great, forget how to pronounce it, but obviously the Rob Agger guy or Adger or whatever, you know, he did a really good thing on Aliens, which was James Cameron, where he shows this whole subtext that is really apparent. It's one of those that's not really that far out. It's just like, wow, dude, that's actually a better movie than I had realized. So I was paying attention, and the first thing, you know, my girlfriend says, oh, well, I don't know if we're going to see the mother. Where's the mother, you know, if you're going to get Freudian with it? And immediately it shows that the main brain of the ship that they refer to as mother, repeatedly. They're like, mother says this, and, you know, and mother's the one who tells Ripley that it was actually just a military profit mission, that they wanted this organism to be brought on. And then it turns out that that guy Ash, who is in Naked Lunch as the guy who's slowly killing his wife Joan with witchcraft, that he's an android or whatever. But anyways, I was
wait, this is what, Aliens or Alien? Because Mother and Ash is in Alien, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm talking about Alien.
Oh yeah, okay.
The same that James Cameron, who did the second one, Rob Agger broke it down and did this whole explanation of it that really brought it to light. So while watching Alien, I'm like, okay, let's really look here for intentional subtext. And so I'm like, well, let's look at it from a Freudian perspective. First of all, the alien's a dick, and then the ship itself is called Mother. I mean, as the
absolutely
brain of the ship, which is basically the howl of the ship, even though it doesn't talk to you in the same way. But
hey, that's really interesting, because I haven't seen the new Prometheus, but I spoke to somebody like right after they had seen it, this guy Frater X. I spoke to him. He had just seen it the night before, and he said there's this really weird scene which seemed to be like a total like abortion. Like basically, like the woman gets the alien inside of her, and she jumps into this like self surgery machine, and she's just screaming like, "Get it out of me! Get it out of me!" And he's like, "You're watching what's essentially like a self-performed abortion." And when you think of the ship as mother and the alien as this like invasive life form of like, it's basically trying to abort, you know, it's funny because we've been like in space terms, we use the, you know, abort the mission,
which is what she does. And she blows up the whole ship.
Right, so it's like this sort of cosmic abortion, and that's actually really, really interesting.
Totally. So the other level of it is that the alien, when they describe it, when it comes out with Ash, when he, you know, after his head gets taken off or whatever, and or maybe it's before, I forget, but I think it's after. Anyways, whatever. He basically describes the alien as the ultimate, like, master race.
Correct,
that perfect. Created. And so you have this kind of, like, well, theosophical, almost, in terms of its take on the races. But then, you know, obviously, like, not fascist Nazi business. And he doesn't mind, like, that it's this fucking scary-ass, gnarly-ass thing because it's so pure. And so he's... whatever, he's looking at it from that perspective, and he's just, you know, whatever, he admires it, is what she says. And so I was considering Wilhelm Reich's The Psychology of Fascism, where he shows how the people were manipulated through their sexuality to basically accept a fascist regime and to support it, and that all the symbolism of the Nazis was basically, well, first of all, phallic, obviously, but then how that played on their consciousness. And it's a great book. I loaned it to my rabbi, but I want to look at it again, because I think that there's definitely something there in terms of, like, I'd say the best way to decipher Alien from what I'm gathering right now would be with Wilhelm Reich's The Psychology of Fascism.
Did you guys also pick up how Ripley has that cat?
Yes.
Yes.
So it's like a pussy.
Totally. It's Jonesy.
Jonesy. Okay.
Or Jones, she calls him. The guy calls him.
Right.
Her.
I'm jonesing for some pussy.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I was trying to. I don't know. I was looking at that in different ways, but I don't know how to interpret that completely.
Just to take this, you know, I don't know. It gets us into weird territory, but let me just take it where it goes. Is okay if the if this is a sort of like abortion narrative, you know, the idea that it's a sort of you know, the it's my body, my, you know, my right to choose sort of thing. What is the only thing that Ripley saves on that fucking ship is her
pussy.
Right. Yeah, so it's like saying like, I'm saving my pussy, you know, I'm getting this fucking your nasty ass alien dick sperm thing out of me with your, and basically the alien even has acidic blood, you know, it's like, so it's like your precious bodily fluids, as Ripper would say, are like toxic to me. Get your nasty shit away from me. I'm saving my pussy.
Did right. you say Ripper?
Yeah.
From Dr. Strangelove, where he right. keeps
with
the precious bodily
fluids. Same way. Huh? You know, I mean, with a giant fucking atomic blast, which is right. basically the orgasm too, which is how what I mean, obviously with Dr. Strangelove, that's the subtext,
yeah.
is that you have Mother Russia and then you have America, and America basically wanting to fuck Mother Russia, which is use its big old bomb, you know, and the
it's
whole thing playing out like a sexual drama, you know, and then it ends with a big, you know, they do it, you know.
And Kubrick admits to that, the orgasmic imagery being intentional.
Yeah, completely. He did.
I wonder if Ridley Scott would.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we should write him.
Yeah. But I brought up Ripper because it kind of reminded me of Ripley. They start off the same way.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, rest in peace.
Yeah, there you go. Hey.
Yeah.
But going with the abortion thing, did you guys see Alien 3?
Yes.
Where it basically ends with a sort of mutual abortion, I guess you could call it.
Yeah, she dives into the fire. That's in terms of her her being a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the fourth one, she gets replaced by an android, but that's beside the point.
Was that an android, or was she like genetically reconstructed with like a piece of hair?
Yeah, maybe she was genetically reconstructed.
Yeah, I don't know.
I never saw the fourth one. It's been a long time since I saw the third one, but I never saw the fourth one.
Yeah, it's been a long time too. But it's interesting that it takes place in a giant prison, and the prison metaphor is a pretty good one for Burroughs. Look at the prison we are in. We are all in. This is a penal colony.
Penal colony. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh, yeah.
So.
I mean, with the alien, it's also a big, tall, black guy who actually played him. So there's also that subtext.
Like,
big,
like
a big black cock?
Yeah, there you go. I mean, that's...
Monster
that's
cock is what they call it.
Oh my god, yes. Holy shit.
So it's like, be afraid of, you know, big black penises.
Right, yeah. Ripley's Believe It or Not.
That's another subtext that I saw, but yeah, there's a million ways you could go with that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the whole, I really liked, actually, the first, I don't think I saw the others, but there was a Predator versus Alien movie, because Predator is another one to get into.
Mm-hmm.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is, like, the weirdest one in terms of sync, like,
oh yeah,
Junior and Twins and all that shit, and then when you, like, I don't know, he's weird.
Schwarzenegger is a bizarre fucking sync resonator. I'll agree with that. But did you know, like, think about, just for a second, go to, like, the Predator movie. I mean, so I didn't like the Alien versus Predator movie only
like
because...
the comic book.
What's that?
I like the comic book.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, yeah. Because I really liked the comic book I was very upset with that movie. I mean, that movie was just shit anyway, but but think about the Predator. The original Predator movie was pretty solid. The Schwarzenegger and Jesse Ventura, who both go on to become governors. Like, that's kind of weird also that two of the guys from Predator go on to become U.S. governors.
Two of them.
In their own sense.
Yeah, totally.
Like, if I were... Well, I know. I mean, like, this is the troubling thing about being in our times. It's like, you know, it's like looking at our society from, you know, outside of itself. It's like, wait a second. You mean the two guys from the Predator movie, just these, like, muscled oil men with guns blowing things up in the jungle... became you those guys you made your leaders.
They're role models.
Right, like, just think about how fucking weird that is for a second.
That is fucking weird. And then you have Ronald Reagan was actor as well. That's the
yeah.
Wasn't he in war stuff too, as I recall? I think he was in some war thing.
He's in a movie with a monkey. I mean, that's the only one I know.
Is he in a movie with a monkey? That's weird.
It's called Bedtime for Bonzo.
Weird. Okay, so kind of jumping topic here again. I can't help but see here that Debbie Reynolds is in Singing in the Rain. She's like stars, which is funny in terms of a Clockwork Orange with the fucking...
Yeah, I think Jason and Doug just watched Singing in the Rain this Tuesday. Jason really wanted to see Singing in the Rain because of the Clockwork Orange sync, yeah.
Okay. It was just something for me to think about, I think.
I wonder, I think you guys should both watch it and see. I think there's something waiting there.
Singing in the Rain?
Yeah, now, okay. Dr. Parnassus.
Yes.
Check this out. The end of Dr. Parnassus, Lily Cole, is that her name? No, or Lily Cole is the, I don't know. Who's his daughter? Is that Lily Cole? I don't know actor and actress names. I'll admit I'm terrible with that. But Dr. Parnassus' daughter, right? He saves her from, like, quote unquote, saves her from the devil. And then the devil says, well, you know, actually she was never, you never had to save her. Like, of course, what makes you think she doesn't have free will sort of thing?
Right.
So anyway, there's this whole thing, and she plays out this, like, mirror battle, which is, like, Labyrinth, very much. Like, they're dancing in the mirror, and then she smashes the mirror. Of course, bring it back to Anne Margaret, smash the mirror. So she smashes the mirror and runs away. And then, at the very end of Dr. Parnassus, she has a family... And the little girl has a pig doll, which Mark LeClaire said that pig marked her as a sacrifice. His thing was he saw that pig and it said, ah, she's not really free from the devil. She's marked as a sacrifice. I don't know if I see it that same way, but I will say this. The restaurant that they go to, I remember when we saw it, they go there. The family's at a Japanese restaurant, and for whatever reason, my wife's Japanese. She like just pointed out, you know, they're sitting there, and you just the sign of the restaurant's in Japanese, and she goes, "Oh, the restaurant means rain."
Oh, really?
So here you have the pig in the rain.
Uh huh.
Singing in the rain. Set some pig.
Right. Yeah, her name is Lily Cole, and it's Valentina. The Lily is our Lamed again, you know, Lilith, Lily, even though they're not etymologically connected, we have our LL. That's fucking weird, dude. That whole thing with the mirror and then you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight, the amount of connections... with the whole thing with Shit, I'm terrible. I'm Spacey right now. I'm Kevin Spacey at the moment. Heath Ledger, who dies in the film and is replaced by three actors, including Johnny Depp, is, you know, the, well, I don't need to get into it. You've probably heard my whole trip out on the Apollo thing. So first of all, Parnassus is a mountain sacred to Apollo.
Exactly.
And then
yeah.
His name in the film, Heath Ledger's name in the film, is Tony. And then Danny wears the fucking Apollo sweater, and Tony is, he clenches his throat to produce his voice, while Tony and Dr. Parnassus is choked to death. And then you have your strangulation idea in Freudian terms as well, which is interesting. And then, I mean, he's totally the hanged man, I mean, obviously, in the film. But then right before that, he played the Joker, who is the fool. And there's this relationship between the fool and the hanged man. And
yeah,
so,
in the Batman movie, he even gets hung from a building by his leg. So he's very much the Tarot hangman. It's not a noose around his neck, it's a noose around his leg.
Right, totally. So you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight, and then here we have Lily Cole literally dancing with the devil surrounded by broken glass, which is symbolic of the moon, right? It has no light of its own. It's
the reflection, right?
And so, yeah, I don't know. It's
okay. So check this out. That's amazing, because what I was writing when I told you I was making a reference to JFK and Debbie Does Dallas, what I had written was how I was talking about James Shelby Downard's King Kill 33 and how he sees everything in, you know, as everything's evil. Every you know, all the Masonic imagery, all the anything esoteric, it's just evil. So I was calling this chapter Devil Does Dallas. Instead of Debbie Does Dallas, Devil Does Dallas. So here we again have the dancing with the devil.
Right.
I think this is, I really feel like we're on to something, which seems kind of like oddly vague and yet not. Like the,
right.
Everything's there.
So you have Jack, right, in obviously as the Joker as well. He throws out the money and then throws the gas all over the people, and they fucking are dying of the gas from their greed. And then in the other one with Heath Ledger, he burns the money in a giant pyramid and says everything burns. The word fool is connected to the word phallus, which is an old term for money. And then you have the word fool, etymologically from Latin, means bellows, which is the tool that you use to pump air to start a fire, right? So, and then you have Aleph, the Hebrew letter which corresponds to the fool, means life breath. And so there's this really kind of, I don't know, strange idea where they're not at their life breath, and they're choking in the first one with Jack. And then, you know, in Heath Ledger, he's starting a fire, literally. So it's totally perfect in terms of the fool. But then Jack in The Shining is the devil. And at the end, when you put the Rider devil card side by side with the image on July 4th, at the July 4th ball 1921 with Jack, it's totally parallel. So there's this interesting thing. You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? And then, I don't know, it's a trip. You also have the Kuf connection. So Kuf and Ayin. Ayin means eye. Kuf means back of the head. So the Hebrew letters. So Kuf corresponds to the moon. Ayin corresponds to the devil. And so there's just, I don't know, there's some trippy ass shit going on there.
I just like this idea of the fool is what's used to start the fire, right? The fool's breath, if you will, but as the bellows. So if you're choked, you can't start the fire. So like it's sort of quieting the fool is, you know, to put out the fire is to quiet the fool. And of course the fool in Tarot even has the sun as his source of power, right? His
right,
you
right.
See, his crotch stick up against the sun. So it's like saying, like, okay, the sun, the sort of source of the power, what essentially his testicles is the sun. So this is both progeny, but this is also like a fiery source. This is Kundalini. This is everything. So to strangle the, now you want to take that in as a phallic sense, to strangle the fool is to, you know, is to manipulate the fiery forces.
Right. And then Danny Torrance walks in the room and he had been strangled. And the mom says, Wendy says, you did this to him. You did this, you know, to Jack. And he's kind of like, what, you know? So I don't know. There's an interesting level there in terms of the reoccurrence of strangulation. And Heath Ledger being strangled as the hanged man, resonating Danny getting strangled. But then, I don't know.
I have We Didn't Start the Fire going through my head. JFK blown away. What else do I have to say?
Oh, is that what he says? Oh, that's right.
I don't know why that song is in my head. Tommy, I'm sorry I cut you off. What were you saying?
No, it's fine. Going back to aliens and strangulation, you know, the face huggers, they wrap their tail around you and then force their thingy down your throat. That could, you know, that says a lot.
That does say a lot.
I was also going to mention, I watched this movie the other day called The People Under the Stairs.
Oh my god, I used to like that movie. Yeah.
You're posted the intro to that, Tommy.
Huh?
I like that you posted the intro to that.
Yeah, did you see that? Yeah. I had no idea that was there. I was just like, oh, I'll just watch a movie tonight. You know, I'm not doing anything else. Opens with a tarot fold.
Where is that? On Facebook?
Yeah, I posted that on Facebook. But anyway, did you watch any of the rest of it?
I haven't seen the rest of it for a while, but yeah. I've tripped out on it.
The main character's name is The Fool. Like, the main kid, they just call him Fool throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole movie revolves around him and these two other guys. There's this big rich family that owns their project, and these rich people are trying to get it shut down. So they're like, okay, these rich people have a bunch of, like, gold coins in their house. So they break into their house trying to get money, which goes back to the fool and what was that word you said?
Phallus?
Yeah.
Phallus is the money. So it's weird. There's this whole connection between money and life breath, you know, via Aleph. So yeah, it's very, very strange.
Yeah, but the whole movie revolves around him. Well, I mean, people are totally crazy and evil. And what I didn't know when I saw it is that you guys have both seen Twin Peaks, right?
Not for a bit. I need to watch it again. I almost watched it last night instead of Alien, but yeah.
As it turns out, I had no idea of this at the time, but Ed and Nadine, those two characters, the same actors play a married couple that are throughout the whole movie that own the house. And it's really weird because they're, like, really evil.
Really? They're the same people who own the house and the people under the stairs are the same people in Twin Peaks?
Yeah.
So I said, wow, cool.
But I looked on IMDb and that was actually done on purpose because Wes Craven had seen Twin Peaks.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. But it's so weird because they're so, like, evil and disturbing in this movie.
Oh, so Wes Craven did the people under the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And is anyone else thinking about the John Lennon lyric, Nobody Told Me Every Day's Wife Is, there's Nazis in the bathroom just below the stairs?
Oh, right. And then he's like laughing at fools like me.
Yeah.
And We All Shine On, which is what The Shining is named after.
Yeah, right.
Weird.
Really? Yeah.
So, I'm sorry. Just, I mean, really quickly, I don't know, Tommy, so the Shining is dedicated to Stephen King's son, who had died. I thought his name was Jacob, but his name isn't Jacob. It's the son of Jacob, I believe, which I should know, being a biblical person, but yeah, so it's kind of weird because the way that it's dedicated, I was about to drop something, but then I actually fucking spaced on it. But oh, I almost got it. So Instant Karma is what it's named of. So The Shine is in 1977. Okay. The title was inspired by the John Lennon song Instant Karma, which contained the line, "We all shine on." This is for Joe Hill, King, who shines on. But it's the book is dedicated to King's son, Joseph. So Joseph is the son of Jacob. And so his king's son is named Joseph. And then one of the themes that reoccurs musically in The Shining is, Jacob's Dream, I believe is what it's called. And so Jacob's Dream is Jacob's Ladder. And so there's this, and it plays when they enter room 237. So it's kind of interesting. Like, you have this connection with Jacob's ascension up the ladder, and it's through King's son, which is Joseph. So it's just, that's kind of, I don't know.
Okay, so there's, I was just reading this last night. Now, I don't, this is, be a nice thing if Bill was here, he could tell us about Finnegan's Wake, but,
About Prometheus, which you were mentioning, which I was kind of, anyway.
In, I just want to see if I can find this. So in, let's see, sorry, I'm trying to find it up. There's a thing where Finnegan, sorry, here we go. Okay, this is, I'm just going to read you a quick something from King Kill 33. In the Masonic mysteries are symbolical ladders. On the Masonic tracing board of 1776, there's a ladder with three steps, a significant revision of the usual ladder in such references. Parentheses, seven steps. There are, of course, all sorts of ladders. The Brahmanical ladder, seven steps. The Kadosh ladder, seven steps. Rosicrucian ladder, seven steps. Jacob's ladder, various numbers attributed. The Kabbalistic ladder, 10 steps. Then there is old Tim Finnegan's ladder, which is known to some as the ladder of misfortune, and it is seemingly comprised of one false step after another. Tim Finnegan was an Irish hod carrier who fell off his ladder while drunk, since he
it
was
apparently hod, like H-O-D.
Yeah.
So hod.
Hod, right. Hod,
the tree of life. Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know what that would actually be, an Irish hod carrier, like, but it's apparently a hod carrier. Tim Finnegan was an Irish hod carrier who fell off his ladder while drunk. Since he was apparently dead, his friends held a death watch. Parentheses, black watch wake at his coffin. This watch lived up to the traditional liveliness of these affairs, and Mr. Finnegan was splashed with some vintage Irish whiskey, parentheses, Fitzgerald's, and resurrected. This is Finnegan's Wake.
Wow.
Tim Finnegan, at Tim Finnegan's Wake, he's risen from the grave. So this is, but I liked the idea of the ladder of misfortune comprised of one false step after another. If this idea of Jack Torrance having Jacob's dream in room 237, is this literally Jacob's ladder, or is this a seemingly like a what we might consider a perversion of it, or a false version of it?
Right. I mean, every time I see it, what seems to be coming up is just particularly because I play it with The Doors, is the lyric, I pressed her thigh and death smiled. It's like that the pleasure and death are intimately, well, they're two sides of the same thing. So your attachment is also your repulsion, and that we can only see one side at a time, but they're a single entity. And basically that being when to enter the room is to be able to go to the deepest realm of your core of your being. And basically, what do you find there? But that the opposites are one. And can you handle what that means energetically? Because it's one thing to get that conceptually, but can you handle the reality of that, you know, and what that looks like? And what does it look like? But a fucking hot girl coming out of a bathtub and turning into the most, I don't know, repulsive wench you could possibly imagine.
Well, there's another way to take that. Okay, I was thinking of this idea of essentially necrophilia, that he's, you know, Jack sees the ghosts, and he's interacting with the dead. And then at the end, you know, Wendy does as well, but for me, there's this idea of him being. Okay. Yesterday was 4th of July, so we have our July 4th ball, right? July 4th is the quote-unquote Independence Day. Of course, you know, in a being a cynic, I see that that's, you know, bullshit in a modern perspective, and I have to assume Kubrick saw it that way as well. But where Wendy and Danny, you know, go off to break their independence from Jack, Jack's the one actually in Independence Day, and he's the one trapped in the cycle. So he's not independent at all. He's trapped in the Overlook, but he's basically celebrating the dead. Which, what is 4th of July? Like, last, you know, this, so everyone's having barbecues and celebrating. You know, what are we really celebrating? We're no longer actually celebrating our independence. What we're instead doing is celebrating a dead tradition. So it's basically this necrophilia. It's like fucking this dead thing. Now I just want to, if I can grab something real quick. So Bill had asked about finding a book and opening it to 237. And he said, don't peek, but I have to admit that I peeked in the book that I grabbed. Now, we could, I don't want to do this without, you know, we don't have to do that without him, but I do want to say, the book that I grabbed was Film as a Subversive Art, page 237, is Since Devotees of Necrophilia, by all indications, constitute only a tiny portion of the populace, the commercial film industry sees no reason to cater to them, and is prepared to forego their patronage for fear of retaliation by its regular customers. While this does not eliminate fictional necrophilia, particularly in certain low-grade horror films, necrophilia has been impossible to record. Unlike straight hardcore productions, no volunteers come forward to appear as actors, inert partners are difficult to find, while bright lights and unruly camera crews would certainly distort the realism of the act. This remains one of the unconquered areas of liberated cinema.
Love me cancerously, like a salt sore soaked in the sea. High maintenance means you're a gluttonous queen, narcissistic and mean. Just how to hold me, and when her edge endlessly.